Thank you so much, Tiberius and Catalin, for inviting me to this conference. And I'm Alberto Martin Martin. It's not a typo in your program. I have the two surnames, and the two surnames are the same. So I'm a lecturer at the University of Granada, and I just recently defended my PhD thesis about Google Scholar. So the title of the presentation is Google Scholar, Highly Comprehensive Coverage Inside a Hermetic Black Box. And I chose this title because I think it's the greatest strength of Google Scholar, that it's highly comprehensive, but it has a very important limitation, that it's very closed. It's not possible to know what's inside. So a group of colleagues and me have been spending many years. In my case, it has been 5 years of my PhD studies analyzing Google Scholar. We are not in any way affiliated with Google or Google Scholar, so we are independent researchers. And today I'm going to present the main results that we found. Okay, so in a conference about open science, why am I talking about Google Scholar? So I wanted to contextualize this topic by talking about the need of open research metadata. I think we are all in agreement that we need open access to publications in some way or another. But I don't think we have talked much about the need of open research metadata, the metadata to the publications. I think that if we end up like thanks to Plan S or other initiatives, we end up with access to the majority of publications, but we don't have access to the research metadata, it's like we will have access to a very big encyclopedia without indexes. And using an encyclopedia without indexes is very inconvenient. So not having research metadata creates a lot of inefficiencies in the system. And well, this has been a topic that recently has getting a lot of traction in the area of open citations. There are many initiatives to open the references, the list of references in the articles. And many publishers have already done that through Crossref, many big publishers as well, but there are also some big publishers that are not doing it yet, like Elsevier, American Chemical Society, and IEEE. I still don't know why they are not doing it, because it's clearly holding back the development of open science, but I hope they reconsider soon in the future. So these are some here in the presentation. Here are some of the people who have been fighting for open citations. David Shotton, founder of Open Citations Initiative. Dario Taravoleri, founder of the Initiative for Open Citations, and the ISSI, the Institute for Cytometrics and Informatics. And recently there was a Nature editorial about this as well. Maybe you saw it. So I think Google Scholar, as a source of data, enters into this topic. We are working a road, I think, from closed to open research metadata. So in the past, until 2004, we only had a large source of multidisciplinary metadata, research metadata, which was Web of Science. And it's a closed access. You can only access it if you pay the subscription. And then in 2004, two other sources appeared, Scopus, Elsevier's Scopus, which is also closed. And within a few weeks of it, Google Scholar was also released. Google Scholar was, for the first time, a free multidisciplinary source of data or research data, but it's free. You can access the search engine for free, but it's not open. They don't make available any sort of API, and they make it very difficult to get data from them. I will get to that later. Because their main objective was just to help researchers find the research they need. They didn't want to enter into this metrics arena. Then more recently, in 2016, Microsoft Academic released his product, and it's, the search engine is also free, and they have an API, and it's free for some freemium, like you can use it for free for a number of queries a month, and then you have to pay. And they also have an open dump of the database. Like they release sometimes every year, they release the whole database for free. Then we have Dimensions, which started in 2018, if I'm not mistaken, which is also freemium. So you have a free version that you can access, and then you can pay the, to get more features, access to the API, and so forth. But the API is also free for non-commercial research purposes, and I'm thankful because they provided access to me to do some comparisons. And then lately, we have Open Citations, which is a completely open source of citation data, but it has its limitations, as we will see later. So the problem is that no database is complete. Recently, I learned about this poem, Five Blind Men and an Elephant, and it tells about five blind men who go and experience that, like they have to describe an elephant, but each of them only touches a part of the elephant. So the one who touches the tail says, "Wow, it's like a snake," and the one who touches the leg says, "It's like a tree." So each one has only a partial vision of the whole experience. So I think it relates very well to the to our topic, to research metadata. No database is complete, so we have to compare the difference between them. So with this, I start a very short introduction about Google Scholar. Google Scholar is a free search engine. It's inclusive versus selective, because the Web of Science and Scopus use the selective approach. They only cover sources that they deemed appropriate. It has citation data, and it provides access to full text. But the main goal is just to facilitate content discovery. It wasn't made to be used as a source of data for analysis. It's very widely used, and since the beginning, many journals declared that Google Scholar became the main source of traffic to their websites. And it's also preferred the preferred starting point for literature search for many researchers. So there has been a lot of criticism about Google Scholar, about its coverage gaps, about unreliable citation counts, about errors in bibliographic data, at the beginning made by Professor Peter Jackson. And these errors are true. But then we have also discovered that it has some strengths compared to other databases. For example, Professor Ann Will Harsin created her software, Publisher Paris, maybe some of you have used it, to facilitate citation analysis using Google Scholar. And this allowed us to learn more about the coverage of this source. Since 2007, the product was consolidated. Many publishers that didn't participate started to agree. For example, at the beginning, Elsevier and the American Chemical Society didn't want to be in Google Scholar, and then they decided they wanted to join. So maybe we can learn something from that. So from that moment on, the coverage improved a lot. And then Google Scholar released some spin-off services like the profile, author profile services, and the Google Scholar metrics for journal rankings. And in 2014, its 10th anniversary, and it was when I started my PhD and analyzing Google Scholar. So I also wanted to say that Google Scholar is an atypical Google product because it's not commercially exploited. It doesn't display ads, and Google Scholar has declared that they don't make any money. You can check the interview, Nature interview there. But you could ask, are we paying with our data? Well, according to the evidence I have seen, I think they are not collecting data. First, they actually declared that they don't track past searches by specific researchers. This was in a publisher conference, the ALPSP, in 2015. Anurag Acharya declared this. And also, this is something you can check yourself. If you enter Google Scholar, you are not going to get a privacy notice, like when you enter other websites, like they are going to use cookies and extract data from you, that kind of thing. And Google Scholar, Google also has a dashboard where you can check every information that Google has collected about you. And there's nothing about Google Scholar there. So that's why I think that it's true that they are not tracking past searches by researchers. So it seems like, surprisingly, Google Scholar is just what they say it is, a search engine. Very surprising for Google. So now some results. The first exploratory analysis we did, we extracted 64,000 documents from Google Scholar, and we just checked what was there. So we noticed that only 50% of them were also covered in the Web of Science. So there's a large amount of coverage that the Web of Science, for example, is missing, and you can find it in Google Scholar. And that might be important for research evaluations in some areas, as we will see later. We also found that at least 18% of the coverage were books or book chapters, which is also a document type that is not very well covered by the traditional citation databases. But this was a very exploratory analysis. In a later analysis, we analyzed a very specific set of documents. We checked the 10 most cited documents in each of 252 categories, subject categories, in the publication year 2006. And even in this very exclusive set, we checked that there were missing documents that we found in Google Scholar and were not available in Web of Science and Scopus, especially in the humanities, literature and arts, and social sciences. Also, the Web of Science engineering area is not has some coverage gaps. Later on, we followed with the same sample. So we used this same seed sample and we extracted all the citations, the list of all the citations to all these highly cited documents. We extracted the data from Google Scholar, Web of Science and Scopus, and we duplicated the sample. So we checked, we did the matching among the databases, and we found almost 2.5 million citations. And here you have the overlap of citations overall in the left. So Google Scholar was able to find 95% of all Web of Science citations and 92% of all Scopus citations. And additionally, it found, there were a third of all the citations were only available through Google Scholar. But the difference are more extreme if you check by category. For example, in the upper right, we can see the humanities, and you can see that the number of unique Google Scholar citations is 60%, almost two-thirds of all the citations that we found. Whereas in chemical and material sciences, the overlap is much greater. So Google Scholar had some additional coverage, but the overlap was very, very high. So the Web of Science and Scopus are not missing a lot of coverage in that area. And now, the latest study was the last paper for my thesis, but here I present some preliminary results with the same data set that we updated in June this year after I defended the thesis. And we included other databases. Here we included Microsoft Academic and Dimensions. And you can see a similar pattern. Microsoft Academic is the second largest of all the databases that we analyzed, but Google Scholar still has some coverage advantage here. And Dimensions also is most of the citations found in Dimensions are also found by Google Scholar. And the differences are also higher in the if we go to categories such as history. Here in history, I think it's over 70% of all the citations are only in Google Scholar, whereas in molecular biology, the natural sciences, the health sciences are much better covered by these databases. And lastly, we also have a comparison between Google Scholar and the data available in Crossref, the data that is available in the called COSI, which is a database of citation links using the data in Crossref, which is missing data, the references from Elsevier, American Chemical Society, IEEE, and other smaller publishers. So we see that although this should be the most this is the most open data source, it still has a lot of coverage gaps. So it should have to grow much more in order to be useful for practical purposes. And the differences are also greater in the humanities than in natural sciences. So what are this unique coverage in Google Scholar? What is it? What is it? What are the other databases missing? So we did this analysis. We did this analysis at the level of broad subject categories, and we found that about half of the unique Google Scholar citations are not from journal papers, which is most of the coverage in the other databases. So we had thesis dissertations, we had book chapters, books, preprints, conference proceedings, that kind of thing. So that's amount to over 50% of the unique Google Scholar citations. And the other lower than 50% are journal articles that are not covered in the other databases. Regarding languages, there's a significant minority of citations coming from non-English sources. So English is the, even in unique Google Scholar citations, English is the preferred, the most frequent language, but there's a significant minority among 15%, more or less, across all areas of documents coming from other documents in other languages. So it speaks to the gap in coverage to documents, non-English documents in Web of Science and Scopus. But what are the differences if we compare the citation counts in all these databases? So we found that in the sciences, the citation correlations, the correlation of citation counts is really, really high, always higher than 0.90. If we go to the social sciences and art and humanities, it's not so high because of the differences in coverage. You can see the more dispersion in the social sciences and humanities. But it's also high. It's about 0.76, 0.60 something, depending on the sample that you take. If you take a sample from the social sciences, and you're going to get lower correlations. If you take, additionally to that, if you take samples of documents written mostly not in English, the correlation is lower as well. Okay, enough about citations. So now I also used Google Scholar as a source of data for analyzing open access levels. This was before Unpaywall was released. We collected this data in the summer of 2016. Maybe you have heard about, you have read an interview about a crazy PhD student who spent 3 months collecting data from Google Scholar. Well, that was me. I spent a whole summer collecting data from Google Scholar and solving CAPTCHAs just to get the information about the open access availability for those documents. And we analyzed 2.26 million documents extracted from WAS, from Web of Science. We collected the Web of Science information, sorry, the open access information from Google Scholar. And what did we find? We found that 55% of all documents were available in some way. This is higher than the proportion found by the people at Unpaywall when, in their study. They found around 36-37% of open access availability, but there's an important difference. This 20% of difference is mostly caused by sources of open access that the Unpaywall decided not to analyze, mostly ResearchGate, which is what you can find, what you can see at the lower left. So in the lower left, you can see that about 36% of documents were available open access, either gold open access, delayed open access, hybrid open access, green open access, and the bronze open access category, which is just that we don't know which kind of open access it is. It's available from the publisher, but we don't know the license, so we don't know if it's hybrid or gold or whatever. So that amount of open access is very similar to what ResearchGate alone provided. And I think this is one of the reasons why publishers are not very happy with ResearchGate. No problem. We also did some study at the journal, at the country level, and we found very similar figures to what other studies had found. But I think that my study was considerably much cheaper, so I'm happy about that. So Google Scholar has some strengths we have seen and coverage in open access discovery. But it also has many errors. We have found coverage errors. For example, if everyone is familiar with the field of astronomy and astrophysics, there are some people here, there are some researchers who are not very happy with Google Scholar at the moment because for some technical reason it has dropped a lot of coverage in this area. So this is an important problem. And it also happened in Spain a few years ago when an important database was removed from Google Scholar and many journals became invisible. So this is a very important problem in Google Scholar. It also has parsing errors, it has matching errors, well, I'm not going to go into this. The profiles sometimes have misattributed documents because they are updated automatically. So it had many, many problems. But we think that if sufficient work is put in this data set, we can get interesting results. So apart from analyzing the data set, the data set in Google Scholar, we also created some products. I'm not going to go much into them. This was a journal ranking in the social sciences and humanities, and we found many more journals in Google Scholar that were available in Web of Science on, or Scopus. We also created a product to compare the metrics available in many different sources for a very specific collection of researchers, which was the researchers in the field of cytometrics. And this was also a very prototype product that we created for my PhD. And I also created an open access dashboard to explore all of the data that I extracted for the open access study, because some people might be interested in checking not the high overview, but the results about a journal or whatever. Okay, and this is something we are working on. We are trying to scale up the data set, and we are analyzing the whole community of Spanish scholars using Google Scholar data. We have classified the documents using the clustering techniques. That is something we're still working on. So the strengths of Google Scholar. Well, it has an extensive coverage, and it's especially in the arts and humanities, and very high correlation of citation counts with the other sources. And then, so no significant differences with WAS, Web of Science, or Scopus data when analyzing STEM fields, but it's significantly more useful in social science and humanities. And the limitations, of course, are the transparency, lack of transparency, lack of support for advanced search and filtering, and dynamic coverage, this coverage drops that I talked about, limited metadata, no options to export data in bulk. That's why I had to spend 3 months. And more open to manipulation than control databases. Okay, this is all. Thank you for your attention. And if you want to contact me.
Thank you. And please bear with us for a moment. Yes, please do take the contact details of Alberto Martin and engage with him. You can start doing that by using Slido. And I see that the audience is slowly waking up. You have a number of questions. You started a bit of a debate, and I invite you to reply to the question which is addressed by Paul Kenning from IEEE. Your reply will be visible to everybody else. If you don't mind, one quick question I'd like you to answer, if possible, concise, about the negative results that are not in Google Scholars, which is part of the reproducibility question. And if you can share with us your opinion about having this, or your observation about negative results in Google Scholar.
Please use the microphone. You mean about negative results being indexed in Google Scholar?
Yes, I would extend my assumption to the person that put this question, to the negative result to be indexed there.
Yeah, Google Scholar indexes everything that has an scholarly nature, and it's if you put it in an institutional repository or many other kind of repositories, it will end up in Google Scholar in a few days. So Google Scholar doesn't have a coverage.
Could Google Scholar do something to encourage people to put in, because if it's a repository, it's clear. but to encourage people to publish their negative data in the repository or anywhere else. Could Google Scholar do something in there?
Well, they could, but I think they are mostly interested just in the technical part of things. So they don't, it's a problem they have that they don't engage much with the community. I think they should engage more. So they have never done this kind of promoting certain kinds of outputs in the platform. So.
That having said, I invite you to continue to engage with Slido. We don't have many questions so far. Alberto, thank you once again. Please reply to IEEE comment on,